Thank you very much. That takes care of our introductions. Then I will then go straight to, I do not have an agenda in front of me. I'm still trying to find one. But now we're supposed to be dealing with apologies. We have two apologies. One is from Honorable Sefako, who is not going to be part of the meeting, and also Honorable Prince, who we know that is not well. Honorable Sefako has attended a briefing in the province. That is why he's not part of the today's meeting. Those are the only two apologies. I do not know whether from the department side they do have apologies so that we deal with all of them.
Thank you very much. Dr. Ufterhide is the DDG responsible, apologies, and then the DG, Dr. Phil Mujwaka. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then take care of the apologies. Can you then note the apologies? All right. We have noted them. Now, the purpose of this meeting is to get the briefing from the department on the presentation of the IKS bill. So we will then allow the department to take us through, and thereafter we also allow the gentleman on my left hand side to take us through the proposals that are coming, submissions that are coming from the members of the public, which are not that many, and then after that we will then discuss. Can I then allow the department to take us through? Thank you. Over to you. Oh. All right. Then I'm corrected that you'll be himself because of public submissions to take us through. Thank you. Over to you, Eric.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apologies for the misunderstanding on that part. The department did make a presentation in the last 2 weeks. Only the focus now is the public submission that was submitted by the public after the bill was put on advent. And then people and organization, they made submissions to the committee through the secretary. I sent the document last Friday to the members. It's only mainly four submissions. The other one is a request that the person would like to come and brief the committee. The secretary will also add if there is anything that I miss. We received only five public submissions. I don't know if members do have the summary of the submissions that I sent last week Friday. It's a one page. One of the submission, if you're looking at the page, is Mr. Elcott Matlala, which he sent to the committee on the 26th of March this year. His only concern is that the bill should also look at some of the issues that he is probably concerned about, which is the involvement of women becoming traditional councils. We know that people generally will interpret the bill depending on where they are. So you probably think that this bill, since it's an indigenous promotion and development of, and management of indigenous knowledge, that it's relevant to the issues that he is raising. That is one. But when I look at the bill, we have our legal advisor, if I may say so. When I look at the bill, if members need clarity, but when I look at the bill, I notice that Mr. Elcott Matlala's concern cannot be addressed by the bill because it's mainly about indigenous knowledge in the sense that whatever the people and communities have in the sense of medicinal plants, games, a whole lot of other issues that are indigenous. But the issue that is raising, I think it's relevant if you was to address it to the traditional house of traditional leaders. And then the second one is Ms. Pinto. Mr. Pinto's submission made a reference to sections, Section 13, Section 26, and Section 27. Her concern seemed to be that instead of communities, the emphasis is not on communities, because if we look at the bill, it talks about communities and that the beneficiaries of commercial purposes of the either a medicinal band or whatever that is IKS should go to the communities. But Ms. Pinto's concern is that it should actually be the holder, that is the individual, that must benefit on an IKS. On her submission, it says, instead of the community, the individual holder must be the one who benefits from the IKS. But Section 13 of the bill, if I may read it, says, I also gave members the documents from the submissions. Section 13 of the bill reads, subject to subsection 3, the indigenous community holding indigenous knowledge has the exclusive right to any benefit. But then Ms. Pinto is inserting the holder, that is the individual, instead of the community being the beneficiary. She is emphasizing that the holder, that is the individual, should also be, in fact, should be the one that benefits. So members will obviously look at that and see if it will give meaning to the bill as they continue to process the bill. And then on Section 26, if I may read from the bill, on Section 26, Ms. Pinto says that an agreement must be reached with NICSO, that is the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, and the holder of the IKAS instead of the community or holder alone. Here he says that the agreement should be reached between the holder and the NICSO, but the bill on Section 26 reads as follows. Any person who intends to use indigenous knowledge for commercial purposes must apply in the prescribed manner for a license authorizing the use of that indigenous knowledge and enter into a license agreement with the trustee of the relevant indigenous community for the use of that indigenous knowledge. 26 section 26b, that is what Ms. Pinto is really concerned about, that a license agreement with the trustee of the relevant indigenous community. But she emphasizes that the holder also must reach an agreement with NICSO. If we look at it, her emphasis is that the community must not always prevail in terms of the benefits, that the holder, that is the individual, who probably came up with the IKS must be the beneficiary. And then on Section 27, Ms. Pinto, with reference to dispute resolution, says that on dispute resolution, a notice prohibiting unauthorized use of IKS must be issued, which may even lead to revoking the license itself. That is when a person illegally uses an AKS without probably a license or because he has not been authorized to do so. that he must be given a notice, and then eventually, if then the practice continues, his or her license must be revoked. That is section 27. If I may read from the bill, section 27 says, the minister may subject to prescribed terms and conditions appoint members of the dispute resolution committee to resolve any dispute arising from the act on an ad hoc basis. Section 27.2. In resolving a dispute, the dispute resolution committee must consider customary laws which may have a bearing on the subject matter of the dispute. That any party to a matter referred to the dispute resolution committee may take the matter to review to the High Court. And then section 27.2A, 4A says the dispute resolution committee may, as a sanction, issue a written warning to the license holder. Section 27.4B says issue a notice prohibiting the unauthorized use of the indigenous knowledge by the license holder. And then C says cancelling, suspend, or revoking the license. This seems to be covered. And then submission number 3, Sandile Machiki, on the 27th of March. Sandile is only appealing to the committee to make a presentation. He says that his business is in the activity of indigenous knowledge. He's doing manufacturing and selling of indigenous plants. So he feels that in order for him to be heard properly, if the committee can give him the opportunity to present his case. Submission number 4 is Adolf Jobel that was submitted to the committee on the 6th of April. His concern mainly is that apparently somebody who is actively involved in indigenous knowledge as a business person. His concern mainly is that validating traditional knowledge holders is taking too long. When I read his submission, it gave me the impression that he's already there, but some of the plants or herbs that he's using have not been claimed as belonging to anybody. Maybe then the national government said you cannot sell without firstly validating where these plants come from and who's the holder of such IKS. So he's really very concerned because he's saying that he's missing opportunities in that sector as a businessman because the validating process is taking too long. There is also concern that the Department of Environmental Affairs also has its own legislations with regard to botanical regulations. And also in there are taxes. So he was concerned that this bill, he hopes that does not double tax people who are involved in that sector. Another one of his suggestions is that it will be better for everyone if the IKS people, all that community who claims knowledge of, I'll make an example of a plant, that when they register, also they come up with a plan how they're going to maximize the value of that plant so that they do not register it and then take royalties, but instead they register it, but also they work on it in terms of business ideas and how they can make more money instead of only getting royalties. And also he's suggesting that in other countries there is a development fund. Instead of the money going straight to that particular community, the money will go to this development fund. The sense I got that the development fund does not necessarily speak to the community per se. It could be a development fund that is at the hands of the national government, and then the government uses for specific projects. So that is one of his suggestions. He's not speaking specifically to any clause to the bill. That is part of our job. But also, he did ask if he can come and make a presentation. But then the secretary advised that it will be the members who will decide who must come and make a presentation to the committee. There's also submission number 5, that's Barry Jacobs. He is not speaking to any clause in the bill as such, but his main concern is that where he used to live, they had these medicinal plants or IKS, and then they used to use them. And then most of the people around, when they noticed that these plants or these herbs are of medical purposes, they took them and then they used them. But his concern right now is that they're not benefiting anything from those. So he probably is asking the bill if there is any avenue to which they can, as a community, start to benefit, even though this happened a long time ago. So those are the 25 submissions that the committee received from the public. I have asked the secretary, Lodi, to also invite the legal advisor so that from this point onwards, at least he can explain to the committee what is going to happen. And maybe because she was also involved with the NA in the processing of this bill, if members need any clarification, then I think it can help us then. But I also am ready to ask any questions related to the submissions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. I will first allow the members to interact with the submission presented. If there's any need or need for clarity on legal issues, we will then ask the legal expert to help us on those issues. So can I allow them yourself to interact with the presentation? I'm noting this.
So my first comment would be apologetic that when we're discussing this, I was not part of the meeting. I might miss the plot. But I want to suggest that because we are parliament and we are a parliament of the people, let's allow Usandi Chidi to come and present his case so that just that opportunity of being listened to a committee of parliament. I will suggest that. And then on the submission that has been made, I want to capture only one point, which I believe that it corresponds to the focus on the strategic objective of the bill, that our people desire to have economic benefit of their indigenous knowledge and indigenous whatever plans. Because we know that, you know, sir, this reminds me of a presentation made to us by Department of Environmental Affairs, where they were talking about bioeconomics, where our plants, the foreigners are coming here to do what you call in brackets research. Only to find that after that research, they take our natural plants here and they take them to their foreign countries. When they come as a finished product. And you know, some of us are not even aware of that trend, but billions are being made out of our own natural plants. Now, the principal issue that I want to raise is, because next week I'm going to brief the legislature about this bill. For me, it's an important bill,
as long as it does not screw our people down deeper into poverty, but recognize our plans, recognize their experience and knowledge, and give them upliftment in terms of the fringe benefits of our economy. That would be my general comment. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I support the proposal that Mr. Sandili must come and do a presentation, or that we should look at the presentation. And then I just want to ask a clarification question. Do I get it right? Do I understand it correctly that the registering of indigenous knowledge is not compulsory? And if I understand that correctly, then I want to come to Ms. Pinto's that an agreement must be reached with NICSU and the holder of IKA is instead of the community on holder alone. How does that fit into the whole idea of that the registering of the indigenous knowledge is not compulsory? And then I would also like to know about the double tax. Has that been discussed? Has it been? Is what has been said here? How does the tax system of the Department of Environmental Affairs impact on this bill, and is correctly perceived? Because I think it's necessary for us to know that. Thank you. Chairperson, thank you very much. The topic at hand, is a very important one, particularly culturally. I am not sure whether the process is taken on board the Council of Traditional Healers, because I think 99% of knowledge about medicinal plants exists with the traditional healers. And secondly, Chair, if Parliament is to do justice to the subject here, I think maybe all the role players must come on board. It is a medico-spiritual topic. It's a medico-spiritual topic. Some of the healers will tell you, okay, in my dream, I saw such and such a plant, which I must use for such and such a concern. So I would suggest maybe we take a holistic view. But coming back to the presentations here, Chairperson, it is a sort of a dilemma. You see, the individual is part of the community. The individual is part of the community. Personally, I would go for a win-win situation. I do not have that magic wand as to how do we do this. That whatever licensing we have, while there's an individual that made the discovery, I will come to the submission by the comrade here. Coincidentally, it is my own profession that is a culprit here, the pharmaceutical industry. That is the culprit. They siphon the natural wealth of our countries, go out, refine, standardize, make dosages, etc., come back to us is a patented product. I can't lay claim to it, whereas my great-grandfather knew about this. So, Chairperson, I agree with the view that says, let us listen to these people. This is the people's parliament. And I would go further and say, maybe if we can, let's open it up a bit. Environment, true, because I assume we are aware of this Mamelodi gentleman on that mountain where he's growing these herbs. I think maybe him too must be listened to. So I see environment, I see the traditional healers council, then trade and industry. If we go commercial, obviously, trade and industry will have to come board. I would also submit, Chair, that we, in order to do some good work, let us not rush it. Thank you very much.
Honorable Julian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just also want to get into the community versus the individual. I think when it comes to existing indigenous plants, there you can have community share. But if a person now has the knowledge to use those plants, I think that's what the argument also was of a number of factors, where our plants go out and come back in another form. So if we have local knowledge, we need to recognize that local knowledge so that we can create entrepreneurs and businesses from our own. If you give it to a community, I don't think it will create enough will, for people to become knowledgeable on this or take the necessary steps to start businesses in this. I think it's one of the things that can grow, especially in South Africa. If you look at Khoisan or so forth, they already gained some knowledge on it. But if a person now, our students, remember this is not only a rural town. If someone stays in Gauteng, for instance, and you study these things, surely you cannot go to that community, even if it grows there. You cannot go to that community and say, right, it's now the community, it's not mine. It's your knowledge. And this bill is about knowledge. So I just need to get clarity on that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are the comments and proposals of the committee. I will allow you, Honorable Collins, because Honorable Sun is not here, so you take the space.
I'm a person who never wants to assume that I understand anything unless I'm certain about it. On page 21 of the presentation, where you talk of clause 21, if the person seeks to access, enter into a prescribed non-disclosure agreement, can I be clarified? What is that non-disclosure? What? Yeah. Non-disclosure agreement.
Just answer one question, because I think some of the questions are a little deeper that need more clarity. The question that I want to answer is that one where it says that registration is voluntary. The department did say that it is voluntary, but then the good thing is that it's best if you register, because if you don't register your IKS, anybody can come and register it, and then can make a profit out of it. When the department said it is voluntary, it meant that it's not going to go around and ask people to come and register. But to make an awareness campaign, but whether you register, it will be up to the person. But it's better that the person does register. I'll give it to the legal person. Some of the questions are related to some of the clauses, which I believe that the bill did manage to address some of the issues, and also the department will also help us to clarify it more. I'll give it over to the legal person.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Through you, to the Honourable Members, I think most of the submissions are policy-based issues, which I will leave to my colleagues from the department to address. I think just maybe to give some context and kind of guidelines of where this Act intends to fit in. I think the definition of Indigenous knowledge needs to come into play versus individual knowledge and all of the different knowledges that there can be. The Act specifically tries to find application of Indigenous knowledge, which it says means knowledge which has been developed within an Indigenous community. So that's the first thing. Is this registry or registration accreditation process will then, that's your first kind of like requirement, it's find application to Indigenous communities and has been assimilated into cultural and social identity of that community, and includes knowledge of the functional nature, knowledge of the natural resources and Indigenous cultural expression. So nothing in that definition or in the application of this Act seeks to limit an individual from exercising whatever trade and health-related and agriculture-related functions and powers and accreditations that other departments and their legislation may allow. For instance, traditional healers were mentioned. The Department of Health is then responsible for that because they regulate the health practitioners or the traditional health practitioners. And there's legislation for that, which that department then oversees and administers. And during the initial process, when we started looking into the bill and potential overlap, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, even the CIPC, which works with your patents, the Agriculture Department, Environment, they all came to present to show that there's no intent on one act pushing out another. So the rights and privilege or the rights and powers that an individual has to perform a trade or to be a health practitioner will not be taken away by this bill. The intention is merely to take what is formed by an Indigenous community and to protect it. The whole idea of a benefit sharing agreement is to make sure that people don't, that the communities, their knowledge that they as a community have developed, don't get used without them actually benefiting from it. So it's to protect against a basic abuse of somebody else's communal knowledge. I think that to me, just from a legal perspective, is important to remember that's where the Act functions, and it doesn't intend to take away anything else that's already in existence. But I'll leave the rest of the policy issues to my colleagues.
Thank you very much for that. So we'll be dealing with the page 21 and also the tax system implication to the bill. The department will help us on that one because the page 21 relates to your presentation you made in the previous meeting. Then allow Honourable to take the floor.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be if now a Indigenous
knowledge is registered of a specific use of a plant or whatever the case is. Because it then belongs to the community at large. So who will be making decisions on the use of that, and who will be approached? And I'm asking this specific question because of the problems that exist currently within communities where there's individuals who make sure that they individually benefit instead of a community at large, and where decisions are made without the consultation of that community. So how is that going to work, and how is that community at large going to be protected, that they actually, the whole community, benefit from it, and not individuals who are at the core of power within or decision making is the only ones who benefit from that?
So that's the last question the department will add to the two that I've indicated to.
Chair, we are not so clear around the section 21 question, because that's about the inspection of the register. So wondering what the question was, but if it's related to non-disclosure, if I remember the connection, then the non-disclosure is a legal instrument that the researchers or any entrepreneurs who are interested, or even in the research or development of a particular indigenous knowledge, must bind themselves that they are not going to get this information from the community and pass it on to another person. So it is an agreement that restricts an authorized passing on of the information obtained from a community to other people without entering into contractual obligations. The contractual obligations are quite a number. The first one is the prior informed consent. You may not use any knowledge of a community without getting their permission. And this is a very important criteria, because that's what the legislation introduces, which is novel, that the right to have access to or to be denied access to knowledge is vested in the community, the indigenous communities, through the trustees. Okay? This is novel because it's similar to a patent holder. That if I have registered a patent, then I have the exclusive right for the use of that. I may allow others to use it, or I'll deny others. And I have the right to pursue whoever uses it without permission. So it is no law in that at the moment, no intellectual property rights in the country attributes or gives that right to indigenous knowledge holders. So by introducing that in this bill, it covers that. So you need, therefore, to protect the indigenous knowledge holder to have this legal instrument. By informed consent, did I get permission for that knowledge? If there are going to be benefits that are going to accrue, do I have a benefit-sharing agreement? Then the non-disclosure, the information that I'm obtaining, I will not pass it on without the permission, the right of the right holder. And then there's the material transfer agreement, which means that if I am taking the biological resource itself physically from the community to another place, I need a material transfer agreement. And that, most of these provisions are also covered by the bioprospecting laws of the country, administered under the Department of Environmental Affairs, in fulfillment of our membership to the Nagoya Protocol, which is an international obligation. We have acceded to that, and therefore we must implement that. So there is an alignment of requirements between what the Department of Environmental Affairs has put on the table and what the DST is being leading other government departments, not just the DST bill. We've had other government departments as part of this bill. So we're just a lead department so that we can align the laws. And our colleagues from the legal department have checked that there is concurrence. So that's how the disclosure requirement comes in. I've just broadened it so that we can give the greater context. The policy issues that, and our legal advisor is right, that we must take this holistically. If we do not understand how an indigenous knowledge qualifies to be an indigenous knowledge, then that's why the debate arises between the individual versus the community. This is not just about innovation based on a plant. If it is, it can be a plant variety which doesn't fall under this legislation. Or it can be a discovery which is a patent, which will not fall necessarily under this. But because this one is speaking to indigenous knowledge, which has been passed on from one community, from one generation to another, in the conventional IP, that cannot be patented because it's obvious, it's already in the public domain. Okay? And you can also copyright it because it is already also in the public domain. So in order to protect indigenous knowledge systems, this is what the bill is proposing. It's a new protection which recognizes that this information is also not public information. It's not every person in the street or in the township which will know a specific particular knowledge. And so to that extent, if communities have protected it over generations, they maintain it. Over generations, it is associated with their cultural identity. Therefore, they have the right to protect this. So that's why the debate is really not on the actual factual aspects of what the bill is proposing. If it has come from generation to generation, if it comes through a dream, its ancestors were speaking to the person that this is the knowledge that we had before. And if it has been taught through stories, or through certain coded information, it has been passed from one generation. So it cannot be today, because I'm the living representative of the past generation, the present and the future generation, then claim it for my personal use. We have to recognize that it has been invested in by communities. Yes. No, actually there's no double taxation. What the Department of Environmental Affairs does, it also covers their administrative fee. And so people, when they apply for a permit to access biological resources, they pay those administrative fees. Now, in this bill, there's only one proposal of a fee, which is a licensing fee. Now, we must look at the value chain. You cannot do research into a plant unless you have access to the plant. And that's the beginning of the process. And that's why the Department of Environmental Affairs are responsible for accessing resources in the environment. So to that extent, they charge an application fee for them to deal with the papers. Now, if it goes through a process of research, discovery, and then you have a product, because you have used indigenous knowledge, we will charge a fee so that some of that benefit goes to the knowledge holders. So the licensing fee is part of a process of allowing that knowledge, which has been developed, and is ready for commercialization, to be entered into a legal agreement. So basically, it's also an administrative fee. And then comes royalties. If you make profits, so that gets into a benefit sharing agreement. How much percentage would you get out of it? So the prospector, the businessman, is not being taxed. He is sharing the benefits of his profits because he based it on other people's knowledge. And you can't just get it for nothing. So really, we do not feel that there is a process of taxation. The fees that are being charged are administrative fees for access and for licensing. The actual money sharing is that benefit sharing agreement, and that will be between the community and...
Very clear and straightforward, thank you. Yeah. Can we address the last one, but I saw your head, I don't want to shut you up.
Because we are part of this community, so we know what is happening. Now, somebody comes to you and say, I heard a dream that there's a plant that I can use to cure cancer. And that plant, I can get it in Limpopo or deep areas in the Eastern Cape. And my dream just takes me straight to that place. Is there any barriers that person will encounter to do that? And or he can just go to Limpopo Eastern Cape and have that particular plant and give to a person. The person gets scared and it gets exposed. He gets exposed. People get to know that there's a particular person who is able to cure cancer, because cancer is killing people now more than HIV and AIDS. I just want to come to that practicality.
You know what, there's a case study in Eastern Cape on that one, Honorable Parkin. A person who dreamt about the HIV and AIDS cure, a plant that she can use. And the process was for the person to go and consult that community in that area where she spotted it. In her own dream. Out of agreement with that community, that medication was produced and the community agreed to that. There was a payment, although very minimal, done with that, which was put in a trust so that also the community benefits from it. I'm just saying something practical which has happened in the Eastern Cape in Transkei. But I don't want to go to that. I was just making an example of the dream. I will not vouch to that one. Yes. Yeah. So I can give the department to finish off and we done with the subject.
Chair, to a certain extent, we have responded to the comments of the honourable members. But to a certain extent, we have not specifically looked at some of the issues that have been raised in the in the presentation that have been. Probably this process has been going on for a while, and so the consultations has been with the traditional healers in every province. We've been to every province. We've also been to the traditional houses of leaders as well as custodians. So the consultative process has been quite thorough in that effect. So people such as Ms. Pinto have been to the public hearings that were held in January in 2017 here in Parliament. So these comments have been presented before. And with the legal advisors, we looked at them and processed them. So she's opening up a discussion that I'd already entered before. And then for, as you can see from the presentation of Mr. Jobe in the emails, I am cited in there. So it is a process that we did speak to last time, that between the Department of Environmental Affairs and Science and Technology and trade and industry and agriculture, we're setting a one-stop shop to deal with all this at one place. Whether it's access to the materials, which is a permit, or whether it's the license, it'll all be done in one place. So the sense of double taxation or duplication of our processes will be dealt with in that way. So we have dealt it with Mr. Jobe's issues a lot in that process. On the funds, this is guided by the National Treasury. You cannot just set up a fund as you wish. So this is following within those National Treasury regulations. So to a certain extent, the answer comes from that for Dr. Jobe. And I think the issues around Mr. Barry Jacobs, they are relevant in that they are demonstrating how communities have been disempowered by policies of apartheid, which excluded them from the areas where they are working and the like. And they wish that some of these rights that they had could be restored. So we understand that this bill is an enabling instrument for them to gain some of that information and access that they had in the past. So the points that have been raised are very pertinent. They demonstrate why this bill is needed. I thank you.
Do you want to add anything to that? I will allow you in the last second.
Thank you, Chair, with your permission. Chair, I just want to add on to what was said for to clarify to the committee the powers that there are in the processing of this bill. Nothing prevents, although my colleagues from the department are correct, we did have extensive public participation in the National Assembly Committee, and the department did themselves also have that. Nothing prevents this committee. In fact, the Constitution calls on this committee to, of its own, also consider the submissions. So today is actually it's actually a very good thing. So Ms. Pinto could have had a submission previously, but this, she's allowed to come back. So in that instance, not that I want to contradict my colleague, but I just from a constitutional perspective, yep, that is allowed.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Who has requested to come and make presentation, we agree that he must come. It was the facilitator that he must come to present. And most of the matters that were raised by those who made submissions, they are covered in terms of the Act and also to the presentation. And on the issue of wide consultation on the bill itself, it is a process that had started from 2017 and was still continuing with it now. Now we're going to provinces. Next week there won't be a committee meeting because we expect key members from different provinces to go and brief provinces on the bill. And the last one which was raised was on the issue of traditional healers, which I am informed that there was proper wide consultation with traditional leaders and traditional healers, but it doesn't stop us to continue doing our awareness raising on the bill. That takes care of our discussion. But I see that there's someone next to me who wants to brief you on something. Mm-hmm. Just a minute. Okay. Now, because we managed to meet joint with the NA on the bill itself, now we need to adopt the report on the budget vote, sorry, on the budget vote of the department. Yes, ma'am.
Chair, I just want to raise another point. I've written a letter. I don't know if you received it. About a concern, and I think the legal advisor raised a very good point, and this is one of the points that I raised. It came to my knowledge that this bill has been sent out to provinces for presentation in the Western Cape for today at 10:30. Now, the point that I raised in the letter was that we cannot send a bill to a province for a presentation while we are still deliberating public inputs in the select committee. And the reason for that is it's very common knowledge, because it might be amended in the select committee, and if it's been in any bill is then amended, that amended draft should be sent to provinces. Because if we are going to have input, say for instance, which did not happen today, but say for instance, anything on any of these public inputs made us decide that we won't amend a clause, then the processes will be contradicting to each other. So I don't know. I'm trying to get knowledge now, because I raised it last week already when I received the information for it to be corrected. Because now on our program, I do see that the time allocated for us to go to do the presentations is only next week. But yeah. We need to solve this and make sure that it doesn't happen with other bills, specifically with the pressure that's on us to get bills through the process. Thank you.
I hope you are taking further the point that she is raising. We're not reopening the debate because we have closed the debate. I'm going to Honourable Dr. Mutsime, and then you'll be the last Honourable Mutsime.
Chairperson, thank you very, very much. I hear what the Honourable Member is saying, but in my view, Chair, there's always a first time. I think this bill is the first of its time, and whenever you start something, it cannot be perfect first time around. So my view would be, I'm not disagreeing with what she's saying, but I feel that we allow the process to unfold the way it is unfolding. It is a beginning. It is a beginning. Now, as our democracy matures and our communities become more experienced, should there be a need for an amendment? I think the parliament at that time will respond accordingly. Thank you.
Chair, I would agree with the Honourable Lovascutney in regards to the bill being sent to the provinces, because my province at the moment, today, while we're seated now and having the hearing there, and I was expected to be there and be here, and I didn't know how I could do that. But I chose to be here because I realized that there's a need for us. So what we need to do is coordinate in such a way that members can go to their provinces. As you said, next week would have been ideal, but unfortunately, it's not ideal for the KZN and I think Western Cape. So I don't know how we're going to respond.
I'm giving you Honourable Smith.
Thank you, Chair. We have been doing quite a few pieces of legislation, not only in this committee, but our sister committee as well. And I'm sure we've learned a few lessons from that. The reality is, once it goes to the provinces, it prevents us as the select committee to do amendments on the legislation, because then we are bound by provincial mandates. And that's why it is absolutely important that we first finish our process, then send it to the provinces, that they do their process, and then it comes back with a mandate to us, which we then are forced to work with the mandate that comes from the province. But before it can go out, we need, because otherwise it becomes really a rubber stamp type of process, which we don't want it to be. We want to engage it. That's why we've got our own public participation process, so that we can engage on it before we send it to the province. So once we finish our deliberations as a committee, we send that then the way we agreed upon to the provinces to then take it for public participation, and then it comes back. So it is absolutely important that we first finish our process before it goes there. Otherwise, we are denied the opportunity to do that input. Then this public participation process that we do here is count for it.
Thank you very much, and we are taking notes, and your points are quite relevant, and it's true that we don't want to have a situation where we go back to where our bill got rejected. So that is why we have to do justice. Take your point and make sure that the process is being followed to the latter. The last one on the issue of provinces. Yes, we have opened Tuesday for that, but there are provinces that are already on a pipeline, like your Honorable Dr. Mutime, as well as Honorable Nyambi, and yourself, Honorable Sin, and Honorable Spaku, who have already have their own dates in line with the shared schedule of their own provinces. But we have time up until then. I will then give it to you to finalize on the issue of preparation for those breakout sessions.
Yes. By way of process, Chairperson, I would appeal to our programming committee. I know our committee is not alone responsible, but that item on legislation, 6-week cycle, so on and so forth. Honorable Smith cautions us against half-cooked legislation, but we got time frames. So it is a difficult situation, but I would urge our members who sit on that programming committee to keep agitating that item on legislation, really, that it sort of moves on time. It isn't our fault as the NGO. Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am. Over to you. Honourable members, members will recall that I sent a program on this piece of legislation some time ago. But the first people that I sent it to were the PLOs of all the provinces. And it stipulated clearly that the briefing by the permanent delegates is going to be next week on the 23 of May. But to my surprise, the provinces keep on sending me to say, we are requesting Dr. Matimas to come and brief the province on this day, which is a day, which is a week before the week that is planned by the committee. So I'm happy if members are raising this, because it's frustrating to us, because members have to go. We cannot say Dr. Matimas cannot go, but where she is also needed this time. For instance, Honorable Sifago is briefing Northwest today as we are sitting here. It is quite a challenge, but my program indicates clearly that permanent delegates are expected to brief their provinces next week on the 23rd. But I cannot control what is happening in other provinces.
We have closed the matter by saying, yes, we agree with the sentiments raised. They are correct, and we need to make sure that we do not give it. Two, we will allow provinces, in terms of their schedule, to have briefings, but it shouldn't be before we sit as a committee, to allow us to make our amendments. That's the summary of what we're debating. Can you agree on that?
You insist, Honorable. I just want to add another point. Can I also request the chair to raise this matter with the chair of chairs and with programming, because I also think
issue is that sometimes the bill is being sent through by the chair of the NCLP to provinces for information. And then provinces start processing the bill before they get the green light from the select committees. And that needs to be sorted out, because I understand why they're sending it for processing, but it can create a misunderstanding and a process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your point is well taken. On that note, we are done with the agenda of the day. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Which one?
Your the adoption of the agenda for such an important thing.
Report of the Select Committee on Communication and Public Enterprise Strategic Plan 2014-2015 to 2018-2019 and Annual Performance Plan 2018 to 2019 of the Department of Public Enterprise dated 16 May 2018. The Select Committee on Communication and Public Enterprise have considered the Public Enterprise Strategic Plan 2014-2015 to 2018-2019 and the Annual Performance Plan of 2018-2019 of the Department of Public Enterprise reports that it has concluded the deliberation thereon. Reports be considered for adoption. Honorable Party.
Mandivume ukuthi siadopt the report. But you know, I've got a question. Was the minister present when that APP was implemented?
You asking when it was presented? Yes. I'm told yes. Yes, oh, he was present. There was a joint meeting at the NA. The minister was present. Yes. Who is seconding? Honorable Dr. Mutimi is seconding. Thank you. That concludes the business? Yes, sir.
Oh, I should be there.